Hello, everyone, and welcome to a podcast of the cinema.
And dogs barking.
Yes, and a podcast of It's Too Hot to Close the Windows.
You are Poopy Cacus.
And you are Duty Cacus.
And I'm Duty Cacus.
A shout out to a movie that no one saw.
There was this movie.
Came out 2007?
I don't know. Stars your Twitter pal.
Yes, who I just saw at Outfest.
Nia
Vardalos. IRL. Nia Vardalos.
Big Vagri Wedding fame, Nia Vardalos.
Yes.
She's your Twitter pal.
Yes.
Actually, she's now...
She's our Twitter
she's
pal.
She's now my Twitter pal,
you guys
pal
corresponded
too, yeah.
This weekend.
So she's in this bad movie called...
My Life in Ruins.
Called My Life in Ruins. She did not...
write or direct.
Write or direct it. So I can say, this is a bad movie.
She's lovely in it.
With her.
And it's clearly, if there were such a thing as a Nia Vardalos vehicle, like this movie seems to have been written for her. She plays a Greek-American who is a tourist guide through the Greek ruins. It's very, if it's Tuesday, this must be, you know, Mykonos.
They just forgot that her being appealing is not the same thing as a script being funny.
Yeah, she's carrying a lot of water in this movie, but it only goes so far.
Right. But there are two funny bits in it.
Well, really? That make Dave White cackle.
I introduce a character whose name is Poopy Cacus.
And he's the love interest.
And he's the love interest. And her and his cousin or
no, his nephew you meet at the end of the film.
Duty Cacus.
It doesn't take much to set off Dave White.
6-7 years later, that still makes me laugh. I don't know why, but she was on Twitter yesterday talking about this movie.
Yeah, like her Throwback Thursday. She posted a picture of her and the guy who played Poopy Cacus.
Yeah, and I saw it and I thought, that movie, that's not a good movie. But then I tweeted back. I actually have, you know, I've never met her.
Oh, okay.
You've met her.
I've met her a couple times.
Talked to her, Outfest stuff and things like that.
We have a mutual friend.
And we have a mutual friend, yes. But I just thought, well, I've never tweeted. She follows me, but I've never tweeted back to her or anything. So I just wrote, in our home, we have a shrine to Poopy Cacus and Duty Cacus. She liked that tweet.
She was amused. I think I actually had tweeted at her a couple years ago because I fell asleep on a plane. This was back before everybody had just the screens on the back of their seats, but there was just the one communal one. Yeah. And then I fell asleep on a screen on a plane, and I woke up, and what do I see on screen but Poopy Cacus?
Oh, that was the movie on the plane.
Yeah.
Did you watch it?
I don't know. I'd already seen it, but you know, it was. It was just funny. Like, literally, I opened my eyes, and the first thing I saw was that dude on the screen. I was like, oh, Poopy Cacus.
Remember when the movie on the plane, this was a long, long time ago, and I remember this flight specifically.
Mm-hmm.
Because it was, I just dropped an entire container, an empty container.
Yes.
Of half and half into the trash.
Into the recycling.
Whatever. Remember... Back in the day when there was only a movie on the plane, and remember, and you had to watch it on the screen that was up at the front.
I believe I just said all this. Yes, I remember because
I was very busy.
I said it two sentences ago.
I was very busy putting trash in the trash bag.
Anyway, tell your fascinating story.
Remember when the movie was Dog of Flanders?
With like Cheryl Ladd and John Voight or whatever.
Yeah, that was the movie.
It was the remake of the classic Dog of Flanders.
Dog of Flanders. That was the flight where we lost altitude suddenly.
Mm-hmm.
And went down, 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 down very fast.
To the tunnel of love.
And that had never happened to me before on a plane. And I was already a nervous flyer.
Mm-hmm.
But that is the flight.
this was your tipping point into becoming a big chicken?
A full blown phobic.
Hmm. See, I barely remember that part. I remember Dog of Flanders more than I remember the sudden descent.
No, it happened during the movie.
Hmm.
So Dog of Flanders is why I'm scared to fly.
Ah. Curse you, Dog of Flanders.
It was as though, it was like being on one of those Six Flags rides where they bring you all the way up.
And the parachute.
And then they just drop you.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what's the one
at Tower of Terror.
What's the one at the California Adventure?
Tower of Terror.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
It's a Disneyland proper, I think.
I sat outside Tower of Terror once.
Yes.
While all of y'all wrote it.
Yeah, like you walked through the first part because Cobb wanted you to see the lobby and all the sort of the art direction of it, and then you walked out.
And you
were mocked by a park employee, were you not?
By Cruella De Vil. Cruella De Vil was hanging outside. Whoever is dressed as Cruella De Vil.
No, it was the real one.
The Cruella De Vil is hanging outside Tower of Terror and sees me walk out, and she goes, "Too scared to go on Tower of Terror." I said, "You leave me alone." I'm not five. I'm not a child. Go taunt a child. To her credit, she was really good at taunting the children.
Yes.
Like, the parents were eating it up. The parents were like, "Oh, good, be mean to my child." Like,
because I can't.
She was being really mean to the kids.
As she should.
And getting, like, you would think that that wouldn't be tolerated, like, the level of sarcasm and just, you know.
It's like going to a Don Rickles concert.
I understand. Yeah. Like, your baby's first insult comic.
There you go.
Yeah.
Yes.
She was terrific. Like, I didn't want her messing with me at all. Because I don't need to explain myself to a person in a Halloween costume. You know, but the, she was great. I sat there on the bench watching her. Look, she'd come right up to kids, little kids with the parents. She'd say, "What a perfectly dreadful child." The parents are like, "Yay!"
Yeah, it never works when I do it at Disneyland. I get chased out of the park.
That's not true. You've never been chased out of the park.
I'm kidding. Just going for the joke there. I just got back from...
Were you?
No. Yes. Well, I don't know what we're talking about now.
You were going for a joke.
Yes. I just got back from Comic-Con.
So what? You know, your story about the Your Opinion Sucks panel was kind of not interesting.
Which story? You telling you about it?
Telling me about it.
Well,
nothing interesting happened.
It was... It played
according to your version. Well, I mean, you're not good at remembering details of this.
You know, anyway. Look, the people there were excited to be there. There was a lot of enthusiasm. We barely had time to get through all
I'm sure the event itself was fun.
Yeah, I'm just not telling
you're
it right.
You're not telling it right.
Well, you know, okay, fine. Look, for me, the highlight was the guy in the mariachi ninja outfit who stepped up to the mic to defend The Notebook. I thought that was, you know, not a turn I had expected at San Diego Comic-Con.
Yeah. And then the mommy blogger smacked him down.
Yeah, I know. Of all people, the mommy blogger was not having any defense of Nicholas Sparks.
There was you on the panel.
It was me, the mommy blogger, Nell.
The mommy blogger,
whose name last name I
forget. The esteemed Leonard Maltin.
Yes. Scott Mance from Access Hollywood. Tiffany from Fandango and DC Comics, who we met the other night.
Yes.
And Ben Lyons.
Who is not a critic.
Apparently now he's a sports guy.
Right.
So he is...
He did the show with the Ben.
With our Ben. Yeah. He and Ben Mankiewicz took over at the movies from, or whatever the last thing it was called, from Ebert and Roper. Infamously, do we say? I don't know. It was not well received. They lasted a year and
helicopter time.
Yes.
Thanks, helicopter.
You know,
your helicoptering.
I think it was a thankless gig, really, for anybody to step into that. And you know, it was even a thankless gig for Michael Phillips and Tony Scott, who have a lot more actual, you know, hardcore movie reviewing under their belt. So, you know, it was a tough gig. He was perfectly nice. I had seen Ben Lyons at screenings before, but we'd never actually met, and We were formally introduced. I told him I've always felt one degree of separation from him, since I now review movies with Ben Mankiewicz on a weekly basis.
That is right.
But yeah, so he was fine. He did do that thing where he called a movie star by his first name, which is the thing I hate.
Dude, stop it.
In the world more than almost anything else.
No, no one's allowed to do that ever.
Yeah. But anyway, but he was fine. It was a fun panel. And people,
Unless you are boning the movie star.
Or no, if they're in your phone and you can set up a lunch, you don't get to call them by their first name. I think that's the rule.
If you have them in your phone.
Yes.
And you can set up the lunch.
Correct.
Then you can do that.
Yes.
You just said the opposite of that.
No.
Yeah.
I will go back and listen to this.
You had a typo in your mouth.
Wrong. I don't believe you.
Anyway.
For example, Nia Vardalos is our Twitter friend, and I've met her a few times.
I'm not calling her up on the phone.
Not in my phone.
Yo.
So she is Nia Vardalos.
Twitter friend.
Yes. I know where the lines are drawn.
Let's just keep it friendly.
Like, but anyway,
too intimate.
It was a great panel. It's the second year they did it at Comic-Con, and we filled up room 8. And people were really digging.
Oh, really? Room 8?
Well, I know. It's not like filling up Hall H.
Whatever. Can't you do better in the future?
I think there was maybe even some turnaway, so that's always exciting. And so maybe next year they'll put us in the bigger one. I don't know.
Maybe if I participate.
Would you come down?
It'll go into
H. Would you come down to San Diego? Superstar?
I might go down to WonderCon.
You should come to WonderCon in Anaheim. It's fun.
I might deign to go to Anaheim.
Have you been invited to do this yet, by the way?
I don't remember.
Uh-huh. Yeah, well, if you're lucky, Rotten Tomatoes will decide that maybe you'd belong on this panel.
I think Matt may have actually floated it to me, but I said...
He was just being polite.
No, I'm much too important.
More important than Leonard Maltin? I don't think so.
Oh, what's he got going on?
Leonard Maltin. Leonard had like 3 or 4 panels that day. He did like a Jay Ward panel and I forget what else. So yeah, he is a king of Comic-Con.
He was with Triumph.
Yes, he did the Jack McBrayer panel.
Did the panel with Triumph. He's the king. He's the king. Yeah.
And actually, Matt and I have talked a couple times about the possibility of doing a What the Flick live at Comic-Con, which I think would be awesome.
Oh, yeah. That would be awesome.
We'll see. Maybe next year.
Might fill up
Hall...
Room 6. That one where the Gays and Comics panel used to be.
Oh, off on the side there?
Off on the side, downstairs.
I forgot.
It's funny. Like a little office.
No, I walked. Yeah. I walked by there yesterday, and I was reminded of how years ago the Gays and Comics panel would get shunted over. Like if you know Comic-Con, you know there's that back stairway where like the sort of like the San Diego people who dress as stormtroopers and
the steampunk Ghostbusters and people like
just,
that.
So, yeah. Like some sort of random tables and kind of a semicircle. And then there's like a little...
They sold the high school cafeteria pizza.
Yeah, and then there's a little hallway off to the side with a couple of rooms. Yeah. That's where Gays and Comics used to get shunted, I think, apparently. Yeah. They've got a better placement these days. You know who was on the Gays and Comics panel this year?
No.
Linoleum Knife t-shirt designer Graham Colbeans.
Yay.
For opening ceremony.
Yay.
Was there. So I saw him briefly at the... He was...
Now,
selling his mango wares
in
the
world of
table.
Celebrities.
Mm-hmm.
Graham Colbeans for opening ceremony.
Yes,
he's a personal friend.
Yes,
we could just call.
We
him
can
up.
Call him Graham because we could
kid,
lunch could be happening.
Kid, come on over.
Yeah,
we don't even have to use his last name.
Nope,
Colbeans for opening ceremony. That is
without
his,
a hyphen.
That's his last name now.
But yeah. So Comic-Con was Comic-Con. Too much of everything, but yeah. I saw friends that I don't always see and got to hang out with Gray a bunch. It was nice. We went and had drinks and a cocktail or two after the panel. That was
lovely.
You
were witnessed on the escalator by someone who listens to the show whose name I cannot remember.
Yes, I saw that on Facebook.
Off the top of my head.
That she was too awestruck to say anything.
Too
I find
awestruck by your
hilarious.
Celebrity.
Say something next time, for Lord's sake. I'm nobody.
I like that anyone ever in the whole world would think that you or I were celebrities. Like,
it's bananas.
Like,
there were... I did sign a couple of autographs after the panel, shockingly enough. And several people mentioned that they listen to the podcast.
On boobs?
On the fresh rotten.
Then you didn't really sign an autograph.
Yeah, I know. I'm not Neil Gaiman.
Until you're sharpieing on a fresh set of teats or a thigh of a some dude, like if you're
even then it doesn't count until they get it tattooed.
If some dude is like, will you write your name as a tramp stamp right above my crack? And you're like, oh yeah, sure. Like then you can say, yeah, I autographed something.
Fine. I gave signing
a book doesn't count.
I gave my signature to some people.
I go to the grocery store across the street. And
but if you are a listener and you went to the panel, thank you for your enthusiasm.
For real celebrities.
Yes.
In the grocery store across the street.
I know.
They don't recognize me. They're not like, oh, Dave, look, it's Dave.
I was paid a very nice compliment about our listeners from Gray Drake. She said that we are like Danzig.
In short and muscular.
Yes. No. In that...
very, very peeved.
In that,
a lot of different things.
Nobody just likes Danzig; they love Danzig.
I just like him.
Okay, well,
I don't love him.
You're in
I
the minority.
Just like him.
She said that the people who listen to our show really love our show, which I was very gratified to hear.
Yes, I'm super.
So I would much rather, you know, do this show to our tens of really into it followers who feel like that we're, you know, speaking directly to them because, you know, they're on our wavelength and we are on theirs, you know, then to try and dilute our stuff to reach a larger audience. For example,
I like the idea that if only we would sell out a little more, if only we would just dilute the heavy concentration of amazing.
Okay, you know what I mean.
Suddenly we would be... For example...
The example I was going to give, I came back from Comic-Con with not one lick of news about the Avengers movie or the Doctor Strange movie or the Ant-Man movie or Batman versus Superman or any of that jazz. I know nothing. I care less.
For example, in 2 weeks, our guests are going to be the Schmoes.
Right.
Those dudes?
Yes.
They're blowing up crazy. Uh-huh. And, you know, they have a huge, huge audience. That's, you know,
And those fans will listen to the one episode of the show.
If only we would dilute ourselves.
They will listen to the one episode of the show that the Schmoes are on and be like, who are these guys?
Right.
I'm never listening to that show again.
Correct.
But those of you who do listen, we very much
appreciate
it. So
we're talking about a bunch of movies.
Yes. But wait, first, one more thing.
Oh my God. When are they going to start talking about movies? When will they ever start talking about movies?
After I
thought this was a podcast of the cinema.
After I mentioned the fact that we have, at long last, recorded the Linoleum Knife Presents More Linoleum Knife episode dedicated to 2001's Josie and the Pussycats.
Yeah, we got to sell you something right
now. So it is now available. PayPal is $1.99
at
linoleumpodcast@gmail.com.
Buy the extra episode.
Include your email address. And we are also still selling the old ones for $1.99 each.
Yeah.
So if you wanted to get Two for the Road or Clue or The Apple or White Christmas, you can order those as well.
In advance. White Christmas.
Oh, well, bank it for this year.
For later, yeah.
Also, we have a new batch of Linoleum Knife t-shirts.
They are here. The t-shirts are here. If you've already ordered one, your t-shirt is in the mail as you listen.
Yes. And if you have not ordered one, a pre-ordered one, we have extras, so it's... Now would be a good time to order
a bunch.
Them.
Yeah, we got a bunch.
You can PayPal us $20, again, at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com. Make sure to include your size. They are Hanes Beefy Tees 100% Cotton Tagless, and your mailing address. Costs more outside the U.S., of course. Let us know where you are outside the U.S., and we'll tell you how much.
Yeah, so you're going to give us $20 for the t-shirt. Mm-hmm. You're going to give us $1.99 for the Josie and the Pussycats extra episode.
Yes.
That's what you're going to do.
Do it.
Yes. We have a lot of movies.
We do. Okay.
Hercules, And So It Goes, Persecuted, Closed Curtain, Magic in the Moonlight, A Summer's Tale. 6 movies.
No, we talked about A Summer's Tale last time, remember?
Did we?
And we talked about how you were going to be writing about it.
Oh, yeah, and I haven't finished my piece yet.
And also you forgot about Lucy, and Happy Christmas.
Oh, yeah, Lucy.
And A Most Wanted Man.
And all those other movies. Why don't you talk about Happy Christmas, because that's probably the littlest. Well, no, it's not the littlest.
Well, no, it's on demand, actually. So, oh, okay. Well, so anybody can
watch Happy Christmas right now.
Yes.
That wants to.
They can indeed. And, you know, I, of course, had to watch it because I'm the Christmas movie guy. And it's one of those movies where it could have easily been Happy, you know, Thanksgiving, Happy Independence Day. Like, Christmas doesn't play a giant thing in it, unless you think of Christmas as being sort of the default holiday when you see family members from whom you are estranged or don't see very often. And that's what happens in this one.
Yes.
So there's a married couple played by Joe Swanberg, who is the writer-director, and the wonderful... God, just flew out of my head.
Anna Kendrick?
No, she's the sister. The wife is played by...
Lena Dunham?
No, the Kate Winslet's co-star in Heavenly Creatures.
Melanie Lynskey?
Melanie Lynskey! Thank you. I love Melanie Lynskey. I don't know why her name just flew out of my head.
Her head just flew out of your name.
Her head just flew out of my name. So Melanie Lynskey and Joe Swanberg are a married couple. They have a young baby. Joe Swanberg's sister, played by Anna Kendrick, shows up. She is sort of notoriously a mess and lives up to her reputation. The first night that she arrives in town, she goes out with her old pal Lena Dunham. They go to a party, and Anna Kendrick, like, starts making out with this guy in the bathroom after getting drunk, and then she passes out.
Is there mistletoe, or are they doing it under
the mistletoe? They don't bother with the mistletoe. They just go right to the
cheap movie prop department.
No, it was just because she's drunk. They don't need mistletoe. So anyway,
you're at a Christmas party.
She then passes out in the host's bed, and they like cannot budge her. Lena Dunham has to call Joe Swanberg to come and like firemen's carry her out of the place. So then, of course, Anna Kendrick had promised to babysit the next day while Melanie Lynskey went out on some lunch, but of course she's passed out cold and of no help at all. They had to get somebody else. So she's a big mess. Over the course of her visit, she sort of makes Melanie Lynskey kind of feel like that, you know, she's been neglecting her writing on behalf of this kid, and that, you know, like... You know, it's the deal where the husband and wife, before the baby comes, like, oh, we're going to share things, and we'll both work, and we'll both take care of the baby, but of course, he's going off and doing stuff, and she's stuck at home, and so she begins resenting that.
Is this movie more interesting than your description?
You know, you've really got to stop doing that. I'm sorry that I didn't make the panel sound more exciting for you. I'm sorry I'm not making this panel sound more exciting for you. You're rude. Knock it off.
I need to be entertained.
Well,
a lot.
It is a joke.
For example, these dogs...
So entertaining.
They're super entertaining.
It's a Joe Swanberg movie. So, you know, people have long discussions and argue and drink. That's what happens.
That's what we're doing right now.
Yes, except we're not drinking.
Our podcast Swanberg movie.
It's good. It's not great. It's not as good as Drinking Buddies. But, you know, the cast is all really terrific, and there are some really great moments. There's this great scene where Lynskey and Dunham and Anna Kendrick are all having a drink at this... Joe Swanberg and Melanie Lynskey have this whole elaborate kind of tiki bar set up in their basement, but of course, since they have a baby, they never use it, and they never entertain. So they're all down there having cocktails, and they pour Melanie Lynskey a beer, and by the end of the beer, she's sort of pouring out all of her frustrations about being a stay-at-home mom. So there's a lot of cool moments. And then Anna Kendrick winds up having this romance with this guy who works for Joe Swanberg, played by Mark Webber, I think. It's good. It's not particularly surprising. It's not a big change up of what you would expect from a Joe Swanberg movie, but it's perfectly fine for what it is. There.
Great.
Sorry I'm boring you, Dave White.
You're not sorry enough.
You're not interesting enough to call anybody else boring. That's what I'm saying. Why don't you tell us about Persecuted... since I'm the Christmas guy and you're the Christian guy.
I went to see Persecuted Thursday night. No, I'm sorry, Thursday afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
At my favorite janky mall, the Burbank
Media Center.
Well, they used to call it the Burbank Media Center. They call it the Burbank Town Center.
Ooh.
It's the center. It's the cultural hub of Burbank.
When they lost the carousel, it couldn't be a media center anymore.
Well, yeah, I guess not. Yeah, they removed the one good thing in the middle of it, the carousel, replaced it with a toddler bungee jumping experience.
Yeah.
Not far from the get your teeth whitened kiosk, where like you can just sit in the chair, like there's a dentist chair, out in public.
Oh,
everybody can look at you.
Do you remember that picture I took?
Getting your teeth whitened.
Remember that picture I took at the State Fair of Texas a couple years ago?
No,
it was in that area where it's all like people selling, you know, mops and frying pans and stuff. Uh-huh. And yeah, literally there were four dentist chairs and people just sitting there with some sort of weird like ultraviolet light being zapped on their teeth in the middle of the fair.
I don't understand like why you're in a mall.
Mm-hmm. I know. I'll get my teeth whitened today.
You just saw the latest Christian thriller, Persecuted.
Mm-hmm.
And then you thought, I'm going to let a total stranger in a shopping mall
have access to my mouth.
Do something to my skeletal system.
To the exposed bones.
Yeah. I don't.
In my eating hole.
So that's there. Anyway, that is the one movie theater where this movie is playing.
Well, near us.
And
I'm sure it's in the furthest reaches of Orange County.
No one else probably listening to this show is going to watch this film because unlike God's Not Dead, Persecuted is straight up boring. I wish it were not, but it is. James Remar plays a devout Christian minister who is really kind and really nice, and
they cast him after watching him bang it out with Kim Cattrall on Sex and the City.
Indeed.
In a private jet.
That's right. And he is resistant to the idea of Senator Bruce Davison's plan to unite all of the religions in the United States under a sort of coexist bumper sticker sort of banner.
They cast Bruce Davison after watching X-Men.
Where they are all going to be now, all the religions are going to be like monitored by the federal government, but they're also going to be funded by taxpayer money. So churches will now get taxpayer money, but there will be no more religious problems in the United States because no one religion will be considered better than any other religion.
Which is supposed to be what the First Amendment already guarantees.
That is correct.
Uh-huh.
And,
so, this movie only makes sense if you walk in thinking that Christianity is already the official religion of the United States, right?
That is correct.
The official religion of NASCAR.
That is correct.
Go on.
Because James Remar, who's super nice, cannot abide the idea that Christianity is not number one, although he never says this.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, I cannot go against my faith. You know, there's only one God, and that's mine.
My Christian Sharia.
And you know, I don't want to dominate anybody, but I don't want anyone to tell me that I'm not in the number one religion. Naturally, because he's such an influential Christian leader, they have to murder a teenager and frame him for her rape and death.
As you do.
And so they do this, and then for the rest of the film, he is literally hunted like a dog, like an animal.
Do they do a hard target search of every outhouse, henhouse, and boathouse?
If and they coulda, or woulda, because they shoulda, would have made that movie a whole lot better. But they don't, and then it's kind of over. Like, they catch him, and he exposes the conspiracy to destroy him.
And to
tarnish the good name of the gospel.
What is the bad guy's end game here? Like, they're pushing innocuous legislation to really do something terrible, right?
The bad guys are non-believers, and they want to destroy Christianity.
Because
that's what every person who is not a Christian wants to do. Destroy Christianity.
So multiculturalism is basically a big...
it's a plot.
Plot,
to destroy Christianity.
The correct religion.
Yes.
I see.
Now, I'm describing it in a way that is way better than the movie. Because the movie never really says these things out loud. It's just that understanding that if you've already bought your ticket to this, obviously you think the same way. Unlike God's Not Dead, where they hammer you over the head with their ideas over and over and over again in the most offensive, braying, nasty way possible. So,
and now the Newsboys.
Yeah, and so this is just kind of a snooze. I was very disappointed. Very unhappy, because I thought I was going to get some straight up paranoia and crazy.
Right.
But it was just a sort of ineptly made film.
They can't all be
for about 35 cents.
They can't all be Megiddo, you know. You know, we still haven't watched that really loony Christmas one.
No, but it's I was in Netflix the other night, and it's in the queue, like number 12 or something.
Oh, okay.
And it keeps being pushed down the queue because we keep not watching it. We keep putting new things up at number one.
Right.
So we got to get on that.
Yes, for sure.
Last Ounce of Courage.
Last Ounce of Courage. Yeah, there's a whole Flophouse episode about it.
Yeah. Oh, have you listened to the Flophouse episode about it? Oh, I have not. So, so then, right after that, I had to go to the Burbank 16, which is a giant AMC. Well, so is the...
Yeah, there's a punky AMC one in the mall, and then there's a big, stunning AMC with an IMAX and a big staircase.
Right.
Yeah, adjoining.
Like, the AMC Burbank 16 is the showcase theater, and then the Media Center 8, and its even less important brother, the Town Center 6. Which is not
they saw that one?
In the mall.
It's like by the parking lot.
It's by the parking lot connected to the Barnes & Noble.
Oh my God, I think the last thing I saw there was like the first Spy Kids.
It's like you're walking into a hall closet to go into that one.
Yes.
Like, how AMC is not embarrassed by the way they have treated these two physical buildings.
Well, I think we've probably said on the show before, the AMC technique is always like, open a shiny new theater and then let it slowly die on the vine and then eventually close it when it becomes too embarrassing and then open a new shiny one right next to it.
And I always...
Repeat.
I like to catch them right when they're on their descent. Like, that's my favorite kind of movie theater. The kind where the employees are sluggish and don't care anymore.
Yeah, see, after doing the film festival at the AMC Glen Lakes for years, which was totally in its period of decline, I don't romanticize that kind of thing.
I do romanticize those kinds of things because I do genuinely enjoy them. If only my beloved Beverly Center
could
come back.
That was special.
Wasn't it?
Yes.
Also, the General Cinema
Beverly Connection. Oh, yeah.
Which was like going down into a tomb. As you were. The biggest escalator in the world that took you down, 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 down.
Into the bowels.
Into a dark, dark, dark space.
These so many long, magical memories long, of that theater.
Thin shoebox kind of screening rooms. Saw Jimmy Smits there one day. He was just kind of hovering around a theater on a Tuesday afternoon. I was like, Jimmy Smits.
What are you doing here? Isn't that where we saw Rugrats in Paris?
No, that was like at the Bruin or the Regent or one of those.
I thought that was the Beverly Connection.
No, we saw
Swim Fan there. I remember.
Yeah, we did.
And
if you haven't seen Swim Fan, that movie, Swim Fan is the best.
It's YA Fatal Attraction.
It is the best movie called Swim Fan that I have ever seen.
Probably the best movie called Swim Fan that will ever be made.
Yeah. So I had to go to Hercules. Burbank. Went to the 16 to see Hercules.
Right. Hercules. Sorry.
Which ain't terrible.
Well, now, are you only saying that because you just saw the Kellan Lutz Hercules and so that lowered the bar?
It did lower the bar. But I'm talking about Hercules movies in general are usually not good movies.
Yes.
Okay. Has there ever been a Hercules movie in the history of Hercules movies where you could look at it and say, that's a really good movie?
None are leaping to mind.
None. Zero.
Although the Kellan Lutz one was directed by Rennie Harlan, and this one's directed by
Brett
Ratner.
There's an inherent ridiculousness and camp object quality to Hercules movies in general. And I believe...
Stand back.
Give Hercules some room. Yes. Exactly. And I want a Hercules movie in 2014 to either be so oblivious to that fact that it continues in that tradition in an entertainingly trashy way, or is a little self-aware.
Is in on the joke.
And is in on the joke a little bit. And this one is in on the joke a little bit. It's based on the Radical Comics series by a guy named Steve Moore.
Who apparently passed away, but wanted his name taken off the movie.
Something like that, from what I heard. Yeah. And none of that. I don't know really anything about that, other than it is a solid movie starring The Rock. It is an entertainingly dumb adventure film starring The Rock with, you know.
So it's better than Snitch, you're saying?
Some funny stuff and some cool fight scenes. The cinematographer sets up some very sort of clean action sequences where you know who is fighting and you know who is being pummeled and who's doing the pummeling and how the pummeling is happening, because you can just look at it. And there it is. I appreciate that.
Pummeling.
I appreciate that. He rocks around with a giant lion head on his head, which is kind of great. It's like, nice lion hat you got there, Hercules. I wished that it had been called Twercules, and that there had been some twerking. That was not going to happen. Here's what's good that did happen, though. There was a publicist at the screening. The screening took place on the night before it opened.
Yeah,
and that is always a bad sign.
Bibbs observed that this is clearly a new strategy by the studios, that when you have a genre movie that is not bringing it, they did this with RIPD last year. You release it on Comic-Con weekend.
Yeah.
You don't screen it for the press until Thursday night, when most of the entertainment media in the United States is in San Diego and not paying attention.
That's what happened.
And then you just sort of dump it out in theaters and hope no one notices.
I was the only person there that I knew. And it was in the big IMAX.
Yeah, that's a big theater.
House. It was in house one.
Mm-hmm.
And there was one row taped off for critics. And there were only like six people in that row, and I was the only person that I knew in that row. Everybody else
was in San Diego.
Well, everybody else in the theater were like the people who got their tickets off of Twitter.
Oh, sure, yeah.
What I love about that kind of situation is that my row is the only one taped off, and people walk up to me and they're like, "Hey, can I sit here?" And I'm like, "No, you got to have this reserved ticket." "How do you get that reserved ticket?" "I'm a film critic." "Whoa, how do I get that job?"
Like, win the lottery.
I was like, "You got to have sex with the boss."
I wish it worked that way. No, I don't, actually, come to think of it. But
the So there was a publicist there. The greatest crowd control game I have ever seen from this one publicist. I don't know who she was. I don't know her name. But I'm in love with her. I didn't get a chance to congratulate her after the film on her flawless technique. She was the Cruella de Vil of dealing with the riffraff.
She was Madame Full Charge.
Oh, my goodness. The minute people started walking in, and I was among the first people walking in, she booms her voice. Like, she's not these typical sort of, you know, publicists who's like, "Could everybody..."
Mealy mouth.
"Could everybody sit over? Can we just..."
"I need you guys to go over to the..."
"If you've got an empty seat next to you..."
"Could you scoot toward the middle? Because we really want to fill in these aisles."
Yeah. That was not her... Her way was not that way. Her way was this. do not sit in the reserve. I'm trying to come back
from
the
mic. Back up.
I'm backing up from the mic. Do not sit in the reserved section. You must have a yellow ticket. If I see you sitting in the reserved section without a yellow ticket, I will make you move. People are like, whoa. She yells at me, sir, do you have a yellow ticket? I hold it up. She's like, thank you.
So she's Lady Arlie Ermy, basically.
3 minutes, and she has to do this for the next 30 minutes. Ugh. Yelling and yelling and yelling at people.
What is your major malfunction?
And the more she's doing it, the more I'm like, you're so great. You are so great. Because every time I see an ineffectual publicist at these screenings, I just think,
you want to give him a shake.
I need to be down there. I need to be down there. I'll teach you how to project. I used to be a middle school teacher. I'll throw my voice to the back of the room. But she was on it. So great. And 2 minutes before the movie starts, she says, I'm going to push the microphone back again. Turn off your phones! If I see your phone on during the movie, I will kick you out of this theater!
I should bring her to Outfest.
I'm telling you.
Because I always say, please, now would be a good time to turn off your cell phones. And I always get this wave of contempt from the audience when I say that. I'm like, what? I'm just, it's a thing.
Can I
turn it off?
Can I be an Outfest volunteer whose job is just to walk into the screenings and be like, all right, gays, off of those phones.
You would be amazed. At the Directors Guild, there's a sign up that says, you can't have food, you can't have drinks except for water in a plastic bottle.
Right.
You can't have gum or mints.
Really?
Yes.
I have gum in the DGA.
Well, they
But I don't put it under the seat or anything.
Well, clearly, no.
I dispose of it properly. Yes, I'm grown. But
you're apparently not supposed to even have it in there, so go figure.
Yeah, well.
But
can I, for 2015, I offer my services as volunteer yeller at people.
Okay, I'll see if we have an opening. There was actually a screen. Can I go to so many of these now? I blur.
She inspired me.
There was. I did have to play the. Could you please turn off your phone at a screening recently? Like at a press screening.
Of course.
This past week.
Yeah.
And it was the kind of thing where it was like, you know, the lights come down. He's still on it. Fine. You know, the movie starts, and it's like, maybe, it wasn't Lucy, but it was another movie that had like three or four different company logos at the beginning, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, fine. And then like, the credits start, and it's like, okay, he's still in that. And then the movie is officially on, and he's still on the phone, and that's when I was like, can you turn your phone off?
What screening room was this?
I can't remember now. But yeah, it's amazing that people still have to be scolded for that kind of thing. Speaking of Lucy...
We saw it.
We saw that.
Both of us saw Lucy.
Yes. And
I had a great time.
Yeah, I wasn't bored. That's the thing I will say about Lucy. It's never boring. It's rock stupid, but never boring.
No, it's not stupid. It uses 100% of its brain powers.
Yeah, that's one of the stupid things about it. That is this myth that makes no sense at all.
It's about a world in which science understands that we only use 10% of our brain.
Whereas dolphins use 20, and they have radar, sonar.
And this is a thing that is not a fact.
No.
The 10% of your brain thing is a myth. That is a science fact.
That's the building block of this movie.
Yeah, but this movie operates by the thing that you heard in third grade. Where some kid came up to you and said, do you know you only use 10% of your brain? No.
And posits the notion that if you could somehow start using 100% of your brain, you would become one with space and time.
Yes.
Which is what Scarlett Johansson does here.
Thanks to an interesting drug.
Yes.
That
she's supposed to drug mule, but instead they kick her in the stomach and it gets released into her bloodstream. The opening sequence is kind of funny. I mean, it's this whole weird thing where...
The entire movie is kind of
funny. Well, yeah, but especially like where the beginning part where her like shady boyfriend of a week kind of talks her into making right. this drop off to this, you know, bad guy in a hotel yes. in Taiwan, and you know, it's the kind of thing where when she's in danger, like Bassan will cut to stock footage of an antelope being watched by cheetahs yeah. or whatever. It's like, okay, yes. yeah, we get it, Luke. Thanks.
Yeah. But I really like Luke Bassan.
I was very proud of coining the phrase Euroschlock crackpot existentialism.
Yeah.
There's a lot of that in this movie.
Yes. He is a genre filmmaker who never met a genre that he did not want to shake and break and kick and throw against the wall.
And then have sex with the corpse.
And then, yeah. He's... I can only imagine that they don't like him very much in France, but that he still is there just to thumb his nose at everything.
Well, what was that whole thing here that somebody tried to start the movement of the vulgar auteur?
Well, that would be him.
Yeah. In France especially, I would think.
Yeah. So Scarlett Johansson's brain power increases, and then her superpowers increase.
Right.
She can control things just by looking at you.
She goes from carrying a couple of guns to just pointing at you with her mind.
Yeah, and there's a great...
Who could possibly explain all this to the audience? I know, we'll cast Morgan Freeman.
The scientist.
Morgan Freeman, the science guy.
He narrates the things that are fake happening. Mm-hmm. All the fake science that is faking. And Scarlett Johansson's job is to just grow bigger and larger and...
Mentally.
And develop a melting...
If she had become a giant, that would have been...
Melting capacity. She oozes everywhere and swallows the cosmos, right?
Sort of.
And then has a great fight scene where she doesn't fight, and it's this brilliant reference to the Black Widow Hall fight scene.
From Iron Man 2.
Where she fights those dudes, only, well, I won't tell you what she does, but it's this lovely little parody
and
moment.
She's being chased by Old Boy.
Yeah. And so, as the film progresses, it makes less and less sense.
And
it becomes sillier and sillier.
And it paints itself into a corner, because frankly, once... You know, she has become one with the universe. You don't really worry that she's going to get shot by a Korean yeah. gangster.
Ain't nobody going to fight her and win.
The stakes yeah. are sort of, you know, not there.
But it's fun to watch her become this other entity.
Well, she becomes her character from Under the Skin.
Kind of. I like this movie as a companion to Under the Skin. And also as a companion to her recent career detour into Marvel Universe mm-hmm. Status. To where she's no longer seemingly interested in playing human beings. I'm sure that, you know,
I think she infuses a lot of humanity into the Black Widow.
Other films are going to come along where she's just a lady. Mm-hmm. But now we've got a Marvel series where she is a superhuman being.
Yeah.
An art film where she's
an alien.
And now this film where she is
an automaton.
A woman who transcends her body.
And humanity itself.
And I'm just curious now, as I think about all these together, are these, and I can only speculate, are these choices that she's making intentionally to separate herself from her own body in her work? Is she working with filmmakers who have hired her, at least partially, for her body, which is a very classic, old-school kind of woman's body, the kind that has not been in vogue in movies for a long time, and because of her and other women shaped like her, that sort of thing is making a little bit of a comeback.
Like actual curves?
Remember how for a while there it was a super waify, you know, they were only casting these size 00 women?
Right.
And Johansson is not, you know, chunky under any circumstances. No,
but she's not a string bean either.
She and Jennifer Lawrence and women like that who are...
curvaceous.
Who are have serious curvy bodies.
Yeah. You could even put Amy Adams in that category.
Part of the reason why, you know, some casting directors are liking them, I think, is because of that. And I'm wondering what these films have to say about her and her desire as an actor to be seen as sort of apart from her body.
I'm hesitant to ascribe
the... I don't know where I'm going with this. I'm just thinking about it out loud.
I'm hesitant to ascribe the auteur theory to actors in that I don't think she sits back and chooses scripts based on this one unifying idea of what she wants to do right now.
But wouldn't it be great if she were doing that?
Well, I think it's probably more like it's either...
I would like for her to be doing that.
It's either a coincidence, or it's just that she wants to work with these people.
It's probably a coincidence.
Yeah, but I see... But you're right. They do kind of stack up in an interesting
way.
Whether
or not it's a coincidence, it's what's happening.
No, true. Although I would argue that she does imbue... the Black Widow with a certain level of humanity. Well, I mean, like, she is there in Captain America 2, specifically, I think, to kind of ground things and to talk about, like, trying to set him up with dates and stuff. And to sort of be a human being within the clockwork that is S.H.I.E.L.D.
That is correct.
So I don't know that that's necessarily a thing of removing herself.
But the character itself is not a normal human
being. No, obviously. But again, you know, everyone's making these damn superheroes movies now. That's what's out there.
I like the tension of it too, where, like, obviously her physical presence is the enticement in Under the Skin.
Right.
And also to some extent here, because she runs around for the entire film in these stilettos and a white t-shirt with a black bra on underneath.
Right.
Which is more or less sort of like announcing boobs.
Although Lucas Shaw at the Wrap said that he interviewed Bassan, and Bassan said the character could have just as easily been a man.
Right.
So I was like, oh, well, yeah. Okay, fine.
But you got Scarlett Johansson.
Well, exactly, yeah. But I mean, but that's kind of a disappointing answer from the guy who made La Femme Nikita and, you know, who put Mila Jovovich in The Fifth Element, like who's actually created some really interesting, you know, dynamic women. Of course, he also gave us Rosanna Arquette in The Big Blue, but, you know, can't win them all.
Don't you like the dolphin references in this movie?
Well, that's... Oh, I hadn't made the connection with The Big Blue. Well, that's funny. I don't even know if that's intentional, but, you know.
I want everything to be intentional.
Yeah, well, that's what conspiracy theorists want, too.
I used 4% of my brain watching this film.
I felt like I lost 2% of my brain by the time it was over.
I actually lost part of my brain while watching. Here's a segue. And so it goes. Let's talk about this movie for 30 seconds. That's how much time it deserves.
It's a recent Rob Reiner movie, which should tell you all you need to know to not go see it.
The end.
I did not realize it's from the guy who wrote As Good As It Gets.
There's something buzzy going on with your phone.
Sorry.
Or something. Get it away from the mic.
It is written by the guy who wrote As Good As It Gets, which explains why it is so much like As Good As It Gets, in that Michael Douglas plays a crusty curmudgeon with a secret nougat center that is tapped when he falls in love with his neighbor, who at least is age appropriate in this case. It's Diane Keaton.
Yeah.
But it's so contrived and fakey and just pointless.
It is utterly pointless, and it's gross actually on many levels.
And periodically a little racist.
So much unchecked casual racism going on.
Some of it meant to be a joke. Some of it that the movie, I think, isn't aware that it's doing.
And if it's meant to be, you know, an indictment of his character, that he is being this jerk and a racist, the movie never addresses it.
Right. It's just cute.
It's just this weird, adorable thing that old people do. Oh, look, old people, they say racist things because they don't know any better. Well, guess what? That excuse has now died out because guess who's old now?
People who were
around. The baby boomers.
Yeah, people who were around during the civil rights movement.
Yeah, the baby boomers who led the civil rights movement, essentially. And so that, unless you are 80 or older,
yeah.
I don't think you can say a character can just be sort of blithely
if you were unaware. If you were a living World War II veteran, maybe.
Yeah. It's really weird. Anyway, there's also bizarre sort of like sexual stuff in this film where he more or less forces himself on Diane Keaton sexually. And she's like, no, 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 making out.
I don't remember it that way, I've tried to block it out of my head.
In the scene where they finally do it.
Uh-huh.
He's badgering her into sex.
Hmm.
And she eventually, it's just, she doesn't know her own mind until he gets it.
Hmm.
And then she gives in to his foxy old man.
His wrinkly advances.
Yeah. It's,
yeah.
Don't even take your parents.
No.
To this, it's that terrible.
Take them to Boyhood.
Yeah.
Most Wanted Man.
Speaking of old movie makers, now let's not talk about Most Wanted Man just yet.
Are you going to see
it? Let's talk about Magic in the Moonlight. I would like to see Most Wanted Man.
Okay.
Can we save it for later if I can get a chance to see it?
Are you really going to see it?
On the try.
Really.
Yes.
All right.
Is it? You say it's good.
It is good.
All right. Well, then I'll try to see
it. I would like to talk about it, but if you really are going to see it, I'll wait.
The other old man movie this week is Magic in the Moonlight.
Actually, there's yet another one, but it's in a good way.
The new Woody Allen film
mm-hmm.
with Colin Firth and Emma Stone.
Right, which I did not see. You did.
She is a medium.
Mm-hmm.
And he is
even though Emma Stone is probably an extra small.
He is trying to debunk her medium claims. But don't you know they fall in love? Well, he's trying to debunk her. And I won't spoil what happens, but there's magic in the moonlight. I mean, even the title.
Yeah.
Here. It's like, it's...
It makes you think of that Anne Murray hit from the 70s, Shadows in the Moonlight. And Woody Allen should not be making me think of Anne Murray.
There was a time in my life as a teenager when I felt like I was learning stuff from Woody Allen.
Mm-hmm.
And if they said it in a Woody Allen movie and I didn't know what it was, I would go look it up.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what's that name? Who is that? What name is he talking about?
Sense and Sensibility. And
yeah. I would go hunt down that because I thought, well, these are what smart people
right.
in New York City are like. So I'm going to be a smart person like those people in New York City. And I'm going to go look up these things that Woody Allen's talking about. So I would do that. I don't have to do that anymore.
Is that because of you getting older and wiser and more knowledgeable about the world, or Woody?
Well, Woody Allen. How old is Woody Allen? 80?
80-ish.
Okay. That means he's got at least 30 years on me. Mm. Shouldn't he be 30 years smarter than me? Shouldn't he be 30 years cooler and more artistically advanced than I'm ready for?
Woody Allen,
shouldn't he interests, always be my teacher?
Woody Allen's interests stop at a certain point. I mean, like, I can't think of any music recorded after 1970 that he is remotely interested in, for instance.
Right, but...
I don't know of any...
Shouldn't he be making jokes about books I haven't read yet?
I was going to say, I mean, well... well, okay.
Art I haven't seen yet.
Yeah, well, the other thing is, I mean, even his literary references sort of all end at a certain point as well.
I just...
As the guy in Esquire said, I'd love to hear his jokes about Jonathan Franzen.
What are you talking about?
Esquire did a piece about how it's kind of sad to watch a Woody Allen movie now.
It is now.
Because they don't have that...
there are good ones.
Yeah, there are still good
Those
ones.
Those don't make me sad.
But he referred to it as cud that has already passed through four stomachs. And I don't completely agree, but I think for the most part, yeah, it's true. Like, and this, there was a bit of a kerfuffle about this on my Facebook page, and I said, look, it used to be that Woody Allen turned out the occasional dud, and now he turns out the occasional non-dud.
Right.
You know, because he makes a movie every year, And it used to be that one every...
Someone in France has given him the money.
Every 5 years... He's going to work. Every 5 years he'd make a crappy one, and now every 5 years he makes a non-crappy one, you know.
I just... You know, it bums me out. I wanted this film to be more than a...
Trifle?
A fluff. A piece of fluff floating on the air.
Right.
It looks good. It's a period film. You know, Emma Stone sure is cute.
Mm-hmm.
I like that Colin Firth. At least he's not being the Woody Allen character
right.
in the
he's
film.
Not stammering or anything.
But there's just nothing here.
Mm.
It's a love story set against, you know, some larger theological and spiritual questions that he has been asking over and over and over again throughout his career.
Right.
That I actually feel like he settled a long time ago. And it just keeps bringing them up. By the way, did you remember that I settled this? Let's talk about it a little more.
I was just thinking, though, about like the recurring use of magicians. You know, he's a magician in Scoop.
Yes.
There's a magician in whatever his New York story is, Oedipus Rex.
Yes.
Well, he has a play called The Floating Light Bulb about being a magician as a kid. What am I forgetting?
I don't know.
Yeah. I'm sorry, am I boring you again?
No, I just don't know the answer to your question. Anyway, bummer.
Fine.
There was some... Closed Curtain.
Closed Curtain, yes. That's the other old man movie this week, but not in a bad way.
But he's not an old man.
Jafar Panahi's not an old man?
No, he's a middle-aged dude.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, he's maybe in his 50s.
Okay.
The great Jafar Panahi has a new film.
Which is a big deal because he is technically under house arrest and not allowed to make movies.
Yes, and he keeps...
And he keeps doing it.
He keeps defying the Iranian government.
If you have not seen This Is Not a Film, which when it was streaming on Netflix at some point, right?
It may still be.
If it is, I'll post a link. If you've not seen This Is Not a Film, which was the last film he wasn't supposed to make a couple years ago, it's amazing. And I've not gotten to see Closed Curtain yet, but Dave has.
There has to be some way that they're going to get more people to see it because it only played for 1 week in Los Angeles. It's already gone.
Mm.
And even then, it was on an abbreviated schedule at the music hall. Like, you could only see it at noon, 5 p.m., and 10 p.m.
Right.
How convenient for everyone.
And I was going to go this week, but at the last minute I got stuck into a 100-foot journey screening.
Yeah. So this one is much like This Is Not a Film, which was a documentary and which took place entirely inside his home because he was under house arrest.
Right.
This one takes place in a different home. I don't know whose home. It might be his other home, like maybe he has a different home now.
Like a summer house?
I don't know.
Or moved, yeah.
And this is a narrative film. Like, he got some other actors to be in there. I don't know what repercussions there are for an Iranian actor
to appear in a
Jafar Panahi film.
Are they non-actors, maybe?
I don't know.
And there's somebody credited as a co-director, right?
Yes. And the name is not leaping to my head. But this is and that may be how they get around. Maybe the other person directed the actor. I don't know how this works. But it is about a man who is a screenwriter who is in hiding.
Fancy that.
Because he has a dog. And dogs are forbidden. In the country where he lives.
The unnamed country.
The unnamed country where he lives. Dogs are forbidden.
Mm.
Into his life comes some people who are trying to take refuge in the home. And they simply barge in to his home. And then one of them leaves to go get help, and the other one stays. And the one who stays won't answer questions and won't leave. And then something weird happens. The one who won't leave starts pulling down the curtains that have been closed up tightly to hide the dog. Mm-hmm. And then starts pulling sheets off the walls that are using, that the screenwriter is using to cover up a variety of posters for Jafar Panahi films. And then something even weirder happens, and I'm not going to tell you what that is.
It's a metaphor.
Yeah. But it is magnificent. It is so anxiety-producing as a viewer when you know what this guy has at stake.
The character.
The filmmaker. The filmmaker. like you, when you watch this movie, you're just thinking, oh God, Jafar Panahi, don't get yourself executed by your government. This movie, it's just a movie. Like, don't.
Stop directing.
Stop making the movie. Like, it becomes almost a horror film in a way, because you're like, don't go in the, don't, wait, no, don't, it's okay. Like, he made a documentary and snuck it out, you know.
In a cake.
In a cake on a USB stick, and okay, that's defiance, I understand, but this just feels like more defiant. Like, yeah. Like, oh yeah? I got away with that. I'll get away with this.
How about a tracking shot?
Yeah, it's, there's that level of anxiety as I'm watching the film. But it's moving, and it becomes very sort of symbolic and poetic, and what you think is a straightforward narrative becomes, you know, metaphorical and documentary-like elements. They don't creep in, they just walk right on. It is a strange, strange movie. You have to be ready to go where it's going to take you. It's not difficult. It's highly watchable. And it's fantastic. I hope there's a way, you know, outside of that sort of, you know, one city.
Right,
one
right. City,
that Monica Mana release plan. I hope there's a way.
See the movie.
Like, I know that there's some company that is figuring out a way to get people in Iran with internet capacity to be able to see it for free.
Ooh.
Like, completely, again,
on the DL.
Again, thumbing their nose right at the government.
Right.
Like, oh yeah, by the way, here's the movie, it's on the internet. And the fact that his name is never mentioned at the Academy Awards every year.
Even when Iran won an Oscar.
Yeah, the fact that he somehow is this silent presence that is not brought up at the Oscars by these, you know, people who stand up there and jaw on and on about how important film is. This is a guy who's risking his entire existence,
you know,
make these movies.
I forgot to mention this when we did our obit for Paul Mazursky a few years ago.
Yeah.
Or a few weeks ago. But Paul Mazursky, when he came to the LA Film Critics Dinner, like, talked about Jafar Panahi. And apparently was very active in the filmmaking community to get him released.
Yeah.
And so, like, you know, he was making a big deal. You're right, though. The Academy Award is silent. Whereas the Cannes Film Festival, you know, that's where This Is Not a Film premiered.
Yes.
You know, they're very happy to shine that spotlight. So, yeah, you're right. America needs to do more to
It blows my mind that this isn't constantly
discussed
among
cineasts,
powerful filmmaking people who could throw their weight around a little bit somehow, some way.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure they've all signed some petitions at some point, but that's
not enough.
It. Yeah, no, not you're enough. Right. More.
I mean, maybe someone is out there who is doing something that I haven't heard about, which is entirely possible.
I want to say it's Amnesty International has been kind of taking it on, but I can't remember for sure.
Right.
I'll look it up. But you're right. There needs to be more human.
Like, how come Angelina Jolie isn't at the Oscars wearing a free Jafar Panahi Now t-shirt or something? You know, like, completely going against the grain and being, you know, why? Why?
You're right.
Why aren't any of these people doing this?
Twitter friend Nir Vardalos.
Here's the plan.
Make Jafar Panahi.
Make a movie that gets Oscar nominations. That's step one.
And then
step two is yell about Jafar Panahi when you accept your awards.
Would you
please do that? Twitter friend, Nia Vardalos, who is not listening to this episode.
No, or any episode. DVD pick.
What did I say?
The Wind Will Carry Us.
Oh, yeah. Speaking of Iran.
Yes.
Speaking of Iran, Abbas Kiarostami, who got the hell out and lives in France.
Makes movies with Juliet Binoche now.
He made a movie 15 years ago called The Wind Will Carry Us. Beautiful, beautiful film. It was one of my favorite movies of that year. And now there is a 15th anniversary DVD or Blu-ray. I can't remember now. I was just looking at it on the internet, and it's a disc that is the shape of a DVD and or a Blu-ray, and it is the 15th anniversary edition. If you've never seen this film, it's gorgeous. It is set in Iran. It is, again, very much a sort of poetic, symbolic film. And it's about a group of journalists who are pretending to be engineers, and they come to this small village. They're going to document mourning rituals that anticipate the death of a woman.
Oh, M-O-U mourning, okay.
But she does not die.
Oops.
And so they all just sort of wait around. and it's a film about a lot of things. It's about life and death and about traditions and, you know, the push of, you know, modernity. excuse me. And about the tension that exists between, you know, the old world and the new. It's gorgeous and it's funny and it's beautiful to look at. I said it was gorgeous. Gorgeous is another word meaning beautiful.
I have not seen it. I should check it out. Although the...
Get you a copy.
The one Abbas Kiarostami film that I did see, I did not really love.
Which one
so
did you
certified
see?
Copy.
Okay, well, that's not the same.
Okay.
As I understand what you did not like about certified copy. Mm.
This is different.
This is different.
Okay.
Yeah.
My DVD pick this week is a Blu-ray premiere of a great sort of classic Hollywood whodunit slash courtroom drama slash comedy, Billy Wilder's Witness for the Prosecution, based on the Agatha Christie play? Novel? I don't remember. Anyway, it's our...
You're out of order.
It's...
And you're out of order.
It's...
And the whole system is out of order. I don't know how the
verse goes. Wrong movie. It stars Charles Laughton as a no-nonsense British barrister who is being nagged by his nurse, played by Elsa Lanchester, to calm down and take it easy.
You can't handle the truth.
Also wrong. And he winds up taking the case of Tyrone Power, who is an American expat in London who has been, he says, unjustly accused of the murder of an old lady. His wife is played by Marlena Dietrich.
Boo Radley's the one that did it.
And she has her own sort of mysteries to be solved. It's a super entertaining movie. I can't wait to watch it with you because you've never seen it. And it's,
I have not seen it.
It is a blast.
It is an old movie that I have not seen yet.
It's a delight.
It's one of those films that I've always sort of thought to myself, what if New Beverly will probably show it sometime, right? Maybe they might.
Well, you know? Now we have it on Blu-ray, so, you know.
That's true.
Think about it, won't you?
I'll watch it on Blu-ray with you. Sure.
Okay. Thanks.
Maybe tonight.
Maybe. Why don't you read some letters?
Hi, Alonzo. And Mr. Good Thighs. That's me. First of all, Alonzo, I think that you need to have a weekly nickname change, too. Because Daves are the best.
It's true. I do not feel the need to compete in this arena.
Mr. Good Thighs disagrees with you. You need one.
Carry on.
My girlfriend and I, he wrote Girl Fiend, which may have been intentional.
His best fiend.
And I don't even know if this is a dude. I'm just... Girlfriend, wait. Oh, yes.
Okay.
This is from David. My girlfriend and I have been serious fans of Dave's Movies.com reviews since the first time we read your review for Babel.
Yeah, good times.
That was seriously hilarious. I read your book. I read your book and really enjoyed it. When is the next one? I'm finishing the next one this summer.
Yay.
It will be finished by the end of the summer. Right. It will then be available to purchase sometime...
Before the end of the year.
Before the end of the year, I hope. On ebook. Mm-hmm. With a limited print run to follow. The name of the book is Keep It Heavy, Man. So...
Why don't you stop advertising
it? Exciting developments are afoot. Blah, blah, blah. I read your book. I really enjoyed it. When's the next one? I just answered that question. Over the last couple of months, I've discovered your podcast and have become a big fan of Alonzo
as well.
Yeah, he's fine.
It's nice to be included.
Alonzo's okay. My girlfriend and writing partner, Gina, have a blog of our own where we post reviews. It would be a huge boon for us if you could give us any pointers, as we really respect your opinion. You can see our reviews at Hey Movie Guy. That's all one word. Mm-hmm. It's on Tumblr.
Okay.
Yeah. I know a lot of people do lists of their favorite films, so here are some of ours. Gina's favorites are... They each give 5.
Ah, okay. Right. So they will have to share a knife.
Yes.
Or not.
But this means they weigh more.
No, we're counting this as a collective 10.
All right. Halloween.
Yeah.
Clifford.
Which we have not seen yet. And clearly need to.
The Burbs.
Ew.
You know, you didn't like The Burbs?
No.
I thought The Burbs was all right.
Go on.
Daughters of Darkness, 1971.
Oh, I was thinking of Daughters of the Dust. Daughters of the Darkness probably was a lesbian vampire movie.
Most likely, yeah. I haven't seen it.
Right, I think it's about Elizabeth Bathory. I've not seen it.
Yeah.
Delphine Seyrig, I want to say, is in that one.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Ooh, I'll watch that.
Yeah.
I'm so excited.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And David's?
Rocky Horror.
All right.
Blue Ruin, which I still have not seen.
Didn't see it. Heard it was good.
Coming out on DVD, though, like this week or next.
I believe so, yes.
Holy Motors.
Oh, yeah.
Cloud Atlas, which I totally love. Boy, do I love Cloud Atlas.
I admire that movie, and I get why people love it, so sure.
Escape from New York.
All right.
Yeah.
You are collectively, as a couple, 95% knife.
Because...
The Burbs.
We differ on The Burbs.
Yes, that's why it's 95 and not 90.
Thank you, Gina and David. You are at Hey Movie Guy Tumblr. We will put that on the linoleum knife wall so that if people want to see it.
I love the word boon just because
I do too.
The first time I ever saw it, it was like an old Thor comic and it was like Jack Kirby or something like, and they got a character saying, I crave a boon.
Do we have any tips for them as movie reviewers? We do not.
You know, avoid using to be.
I break that rule all the time.
And, you know, it's your opinion, so don't be afraid to put yourself in it. But back up what you say, you know.
Back it up.
Back it up.
I'm going to do one more list.
Okay.
Dear David Alonzo, I've been a longtime fan of Alonzo's.
Yeah, well.
From What the Flick, and now am, since recently trying your podcast for the first time, a new adherent of Black Emperor Sex Happening.
See, this show, we are bringing our disparate fan bases together.
I would like to take this opportunity to disagree with a recent fan who wrote in and suggested that you should pre-record your introduction and sign off. Having the introduction come after a 30-minute discussion about pastries is part of the organic and often chaotic atmosphere that makes Linoleum Knife so great.
Thank you.
If you would be so kind, please knife me using the list included below. Sincerely, Christopher in Orlando. Ooh, dude, you have to live in Orlando. P.S. Thanks again to Dave for holding my hand through the t-shirt reserving process. All right, here are Christopher's top 10 films.
Okay.
The Sting.
Yeah, George Roy Hill.
Boy, I loved The Sting when I was a kid. I saw that in the theater.
Mm-hmm.
It was a little too grown up for me, but I thought I was so sophisticated.
It was my first PG movie.
Yeah. Brazil.
Yay.
Scott Pilgrim.
Yay.
The Spy Who Came In From the Cold.
Ooh, okay.
Well, I love that movie.
Yeah, we would have been talking about Jean Le Carré this week if somebody had seen A Most Wanted Man in time. Go on.
Repo Man.
Yeah.
Le Dulot. The Finger Man. Melville.
Yeah, Alain Delon.
I haven't seen that one.
I haven't seen it either, but it's Melville. How bad can it be?
Benefit of the Doubt. Royal Tenenbaums.
Mm-hmm.
Blade Runner.
Yeah.
24-hour Party People, which is just fantastic.
Yeah.
And Heathers.
Wow, okay. You are 100% right.
You're 100%. Right. We're giving you the benefit of the doubt that the Melville film doesn't suck.
You are too cool for Orlando.
Because you know it could. It could not.
I kind of doubt it. I kind of doubt it. We've been getting some wonderful, funny movie theater
happenings. Dear Alonzo and Dave.
Ah.
Dear Alonzo and Dave, mother effing Duraldi and White. That's what it says.
Right?
After listening to yesterday's podcast and laughing my ass off at another listener's bizarre movie-going experience, I wanted to share one of my own. It was the opening day of Kill Bill Volume 1, and I had recently turned 17. I couldn't be more excited to see the new Tarantino film without any parental guidance. And I had found, you didn't sneak into R-rated movies before you were 17?
No, he's saying that he got to see...
Yeah, but
there's a difference between... It's like when you get to buy beer legally.
Oh,
well, you know?
Yeah, but I was...
Hang on, I got to stand up because I got a leg.
I was hanging out. I was hustling my way into R-rated movies when I was 14 years old. I was like, one, please.
One, please.
Yeah, I
one,
think...
One, please.
I think when I was 15, I snuck into Conan the Barbarian. That was
yeah. Awesome. I'd found a perfect seat for myself in the middle of the fully booked theater. I had my candy, hot dog, and popcorn ready, and I didn't have enough friends to warrant having a cell phone at the time, so I was all set. People around me were buzzing with excitement, and when the trailers began to roll, everyone in the crowd became unified in our respect for the experience, and you could barely hear anyone breathing, except for one old lady who was with her 30-something-odd-year-old daughter, both of whom were sitting directly in front of me. The old lady would not stop talking through the trailers.
Oh, boy.
And by the time Uma Thurman and Vivica Fox were beating the hell out of each other, this woman had thrown respect and common courtesy to the wind, barking at the screen and her daughter in dismay at the brutality being exhibited. 5 minutes in, and she's appalled by the bloodshed.
Oh, brother. I came because Daryl Hannah was in it, and I loved Splash.
Her daughter successfully calmed her down after a few fellow moviegoers had spoken up. We all thought it would be smooth sailing ahead. Not so at all. She started waving her hands and making a fuss once we reached the rape, revenge, pussy wagon scenario.
Oh, boy.
And again, people in the crowd became angry and began to swear at her.
Oh.
Her daughter, embarrassed as she was, decided to give it one last shot because she probably wanted to see the freaking movie.
This is like the lady who had to keep taking her kid out of
African
cats. Because it was so traumatic.
But when we got to Lucy Liu's animated flashback and the decapitation of one of her peers, all hell broke loose in this theater. The old lady had had it, and she wanted to make it clear that this was sick and awful stuff and that we were all enjoying before she left. Of course, our luck, she was in the middle row in a crowded theater full of angry patrons, and it took a good 3 minutes for her and her daughter to make their way out. On the way, she was yelling at us that we were all terrible, that we were all evil, horrible people. And not only was Tarantino sick, we were all devil worshippers who deserved each other. People were full on cussing her out.
Oh, man.
And I was expecting a group of people to shank this woman, shake a spear in love style. When the old lady finally did make it out of the aisle, she defiantly walked away from her daughter, who was trying to politely escort her crazy mother out the normal exit, and the old lady opened the exit door at the foot of the screen and let in a flood of light just to piss us all off before getting on her broom and flying away. Once we were rid of her, the entire crowd erupted into applause.
Wow.
It was an incredible experience being part of a revolution, no matter how small it was. That is the power of cinema. A group of people who've never met each other become united over a common interest and band together to overcome a force of nature and uncontrollable evil. It was truly a one-of-a-kind type bond I shared with those people for that two-hour running time. And I hope you guys feel somewhat emboldened by this story of deep tragedy and the power within us all to overcome such seemingly insurmountable odds.
Hooray.
Keep up the great work. You guys are awesome. Awesome. Best. All right. Keep up the great work. You guys are awesome. Best regards, Sean, who is high.
Oh, wow. Well, that was a heck of a narrative for a high person.
Thank you, Sean.
I was reminded of... and then, of course, it just flew out of my head because I'm still exhausted from Comic-Con. I'm sorry, carry on, and maybe I'll think of what it was that I was reminded of.
All right, one more letter, and then okay. We're done. Dear Alonzo and the swinging Dave White, in your most recent episode, you asked for us to send you our funniest movie watching in the theater experience. Here's mine. Like you two, my husband and I are big bearded guys. Well, I'm not bearded. I can't even grow a beard.
You are mustachioed.
I am. I have a great mustache.
You do.
But my beard just doesn't cooperate.
Yeah.
I try, you know, sometimes there's a facial hair on my chin. That's mm-hmm. all that really grows. And DNA conspired against me. I never get up. I don't know what a 5 o'clock shadow is like. I have a 72-hour shadow, but it's gray. So then it turns soft and silky. And then
downy.
You can't see it. So it's not even a shadow at all.
Oh, okay. No, I remember what I was going to say now. Remember a couple years ago, was it Joel Siegel or somebody who not only walked out of the screening of, I think it was Zach and Miri Make a Porno, but then like scolded the rest of the audience for staying?
Good. Oh, nice.
Do you remember this?
No.
Maybe I'm getting this wrong, but there was some movie in recent years, I'm pretty sure it was a Kevin Smith movie.
Well, I wasn't there. Were you there?
No, this was in New York. Oh, it was just reported on.
Okay.
That apparently some critic not only left early, but walked out the aisle, like talking... You know, smack and scolding people for saying. Anyway, so this gentleman and his are big bearded fellows.
Like you two. Pardon me. My husband and I are big bearded guys who probably look way more hardcore to strangers than we actually are. Unless you knew my husband, for example, you would probably not assume that he has a particularly keen fear of spiders. You know exactly where this is going, don't you? During an evening showing of Harry Potter and the Chamber of Secrets. When the giant spider, Aragog, leaps at the car window, my husband's jump out of his seat, someone's killing me shriek of, "Oh my God!" was as much a part of the scare as the action on the screen. The entire theater gasped. There was a beat of absolute silence, and then the whole theater collapsed into laughter. While my husband tried his best to shrink into his seat. I love the podcast, but you already knew that. I also love the fact that Travis and I now share an obsession with Tyler Perry films that utterly confounds our friends, and it is entirely your fault. Thank you for that. Also, thank you for Someone I Touched. I will never be able to thank you enough for Someone I Touched. That is from G.
I will say, Travis, I feel you on this one because...
No, Travis is the husband.
I know. Travis is the one who shrieked at the spider.
Okay. Yes.
I had something similar happen to me at the Veronica Mars press screening. For some reason lately, I don't know what it is, but the thing that freaks me out most in movies is when someone is driving along and it's like la-da-da-da-da, and then suddenly, wham, somebody slams into them.
Well, because it happens like every other movie now. That's a kind of a go-to...
Yeah. But it gets to the point now where if somebody's just driving in a car, I get tense because I'm just waiting for that thing to happen.
Yeah, you're waiting for the accident to happen.
But there were a couple of moments like that in Veronica Mars where something would just happen like that, and I kind of went, like I made some reaction. Everybody else around me laughed, and they told me later, "Oh wow, you really made the movie more exciting."
We're done.
We're done. All right. Well, as always, we thank you for listening. Quick reminder, you can now purchase one of our new batch of Linoleum Knife t-shirts.
We got a shload of t-shirts.
Ready to be purchased.
That you must buy.
You can so PayPal is $20 at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com. Include your size, include your mailing address. We also have just recorded the Linoleum Knife Presents More Linoleum Knife episode devoted to Josie and the Pussycats. That's $1.99.
Long tails. Ears for hats.
That's also available for $1.99. PayPal is at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com.
Give us your money.
And include your email address so we know where to send it. And as always, we remind you... Oh, well, as always, we thank Blue for contributing theme music. He sent me a very nice text this week because he saw me in the I Am Divine documentary, I've been hearing from a lot of people who saw the I Am Divine documentary.
People like Divine.
And I am thrilled just that people are seeing the documentary.
And they want to see that documentary about
that,
Divine.
It's neat that I'm in it, but I'm mainly you just excited that people are seeing it because it's really terrific. So
and there's no missing your gigantic head.
Exactly. So if you haven't seen it yet, it is out there streaming. It's Jeffrey Schwartz's wonderful documentary.
A head so big that it requires us going to the internet store for big hats.
Yes, it's true.
Hatsforbigheads.com, yes. I believe, is the
name
of the site.
I think that might have been the URL, yes.
And your summertime going to the beach, going to the pool, bucket cap. Mm-hmm. That keeps the sun off your
pasty neck.
Your tender, pasty fontanelle came from that website.
That's right.
Because it's like a watermelon on shoulders.
But it photographs so well.
Yeah.
Anyway, I hope more people check out I Am Divine. But thank you, Blue, for our wonderful theme music. And you can check out his website at blutopia.com, BLEUTOPIA.
They make children-sized basketballs.
Oh, stop it.
That are actually smaller than your head.
Check out ChristyLemire.com. If you're a Sirius XM subscriber, listen to The Frank DeCaro Show and Derek and Romaine.
Could have been in this island Earth without extra... Uh-huh. Help.
It's the Brack Show.
Yeah.
In the podcast universe, check out Dennis Anyone with Dennis Hensley, the B-Movies podcast with Bibbs and Whitney, the Schmoes Know, Fat Guys of the Movies, the Criterion Cast, Film Spotting SVU, Pod Crash, Game Night Guys, and Secretly Timid. You can subscribe to the show for free at iTunes, and please leave us a review. It helps people find the show. You can also stream us at Stitcher, Radio, and TheLounge.com. Like our Facebook page.
Your head is going to be a Macy's Day Parade balloon. Actual size.
Follow us on Twitter at LinoleumCast. Check into the show at TVTag.com. And again, drop us a line at LinoleumPodcast@gmail.com with questions, comments, top 10 lists, funny incidents of things that happen in movie theaters, and visit Linoleum-Knife.com where we link to our stuff elsewhere and where Dave will be generating more original material like his review of Eric Rohmer's Tale of Summer. Aren't you, Dave?
Yes.
Good. So that is it. We will catch you next time.
A really, really big head.
Shut up.
Goodbye.